Yeah, he goes on really strange sort of ships that go to sea for months on end and get into ports that no one else has ever heard of or ever dealt with. But he was very dear. And Barbara obviously loved him.
He saw Barbara for a
bit. He really did. He got to see Barbara really a lot. But it was always very, very short periods of time. And I think that I would, again, using Rana's term, and it's very difficult for Americans to understand this because this is so much a part of the British heritage. Barbara had that wonderful way, especially with Harry, of needling him. I mean, I think to many people, if they'd have seen it, it really would have appeared as if Barbara was really angry and cross, because he really would tease. And he'd say, you know you're not supposed to come and see me. What is this? How dare you come? And I have sent letters to everybody saying, you know. And he would go through this whole routine, and you would expect the person to be a sponge on the floor, absolutely sopping. And then he'd say, come here. You know, and they'd give you the most wonderful hug and kiss, and then he'd sort of pull your ear or something. And this was the thing. This is real interesting because this was so clearly a part of what I consider my training with Barbara as far as psychology is concerned. Because basic psychology, as it stands, one of the things you are not supposed to do under any circumstances is to become emotionally involved with your clients. And I think the reason I have had the successes with the different types of people I have is because I do make an emotional commitment. But that emotional commitment also has barriers. And from, you know, years hindsight, that's, to me, part of what Barbara did. He would get you so emotionally worked up so he could work on you. And then he'd give you that love and that support that would give you the strength to go to the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. One of the things that we used to do was, we played a card game, and I haven't the foggiest notion what the name is. Couldn't tell you.
Risk?
Have no idea. Didn't even know what there was one. And I could never figure this game out. I just could not. And eventually, I finally one day got the hang of it, and we were all sitting there playing this game, and Barbara would sort of motion you over and have a look at your hand and say it was good or it was bad. And the whole point was that the winners of the game got a hug. The losers of the game got to their noses rubbed in the ground by Barbara. And he rubbed your nose in the ground. It wasn't a gentle push your head down. And so, of course, the whole idea was that you, quote unquote, that you wanted to get a hug. And so one day I finally figured out how this game was played, because everybody hated playing with me, bless them, because I just couldn't figure out this game. And I'm showing my hand to Barbara, and Barbara is smiling and beaming, and yes, you know, you finally got it and you made the grade. Of course, with those wonderful Western ideas, I was sure, hooray, we finally done it, and I'm going to get a hug from Barbara. And we all put down our hands, and Barbara said, "Dad, this is the winning team." And he rubbed all our noses real hard in the ground. And I said, "But Barbara, that's not fair. We were winning. This is a winning game." And I was so stupid that I didn't realize, of course, we were winning by having our noses rubbed in the dirt by Barbara. But to me, the essence was we were going to get a hug, and I was after my hug, and there was no way we got a hug. I mean, that was his way of teaching.
So he held your head down with his hand.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. And it wasn't I want to be real clear on that, because people really don't believe me when I tell them this. But it was really that he put your head down and he really rubbed your nose. I mean, it was a painful process. It was not... There wasn't always a rug on the floor. It was just the stone that was there. Oh, yeah, it was for a few seconds. I mean, it seemed like eternity when he was doing it, but it was just for a few seconds. And I also don't want to give the impression other than that he was incredibly gentle and loving, and there was obviously a purpose for that. But to have got to the point where you finally understood this card game and finally were on the winning side, and to think, oh boy, I am going to get my hug any second, and to have your nose rubbed in the ground was really quite an experience. Another thing that was really fascinating during that time was the fact that Barbara started to walk again after his series of accidents. And all the x-rays showed that he would under no circumstances walk again and this, that, and the other. And he used to walk up and down holding Francis's arm. And we all went out one morning to sit out in the sun and just to be. And he got up and he was doing his usual exercises, as we call them, backwards and forwards. And he seemed to march, from my perspective, fairly well. And, of course, I didn't understand until years later the the damage that had been taking place because it was not within my framework of reference at that point. And to everybody's astonishment, he suddenly let go of Francis's arm and waved him away, in a sense rather brusquely. And Francis sort of stopped and looked in amazement. And then Barbara just marched up and down by himself. And that was that. No, that was outside, on where the veranda is now. And everybody just looked with amazement. And then suddenly Barbara sort of feigned as if he was going to collapse. And Francis rushed over. In fact, I think three or four of us rushed over. And Barbara then marched up and down. And then I asked, I guess, constantly, all sorts of questions. I want to know about the plants in the garden and the flowers in the garden. And it's also in the film, one day Barbara took me around the garden and all the way around. It was much bigger than it is now. It was much greener. It was much lusher. There were more trees. There were more bushes. And we spent a long time doing that. And at the beginning of the tour, Barbara motioned to me and I had to hold on to his, he held on to my arm and my shoulder. And I was petrified. I mean, as they say in India, if there was ever a time I was going to piddle in my pants, that was it. It was just liable to happen. I was just so absolutely amazed and freaked out by it. But I managed and we went through it and we had umbrellas and was asking about this and asking about that. And Barbara was explaining to me what all the plants were and what the flowers were and so on and so forth. And another day we... It was really interesting because it seemed to me it was very fast that one learned to understand Barbara's gestures. And by that I don't mean that one understood all of them, but one understood certain ones. And on a couple of occasions Barbara would, in fact on more than a couple of occasions, on several occasions Barbara would sign and look at me, for example. He also did this with others, but I'm coming from my perspective. And he'd ask me to translate. And he'd make you go through it until you got it absolutely word perfect. And you couldn't use an and or a but or a maybe if it was an if. And if it wasn't an if, you had to find the and or the but or the maybe. And he just would let you go through it until you got it exactly right. And you usually got a great big beam when he'd done that. And I had a couple of occasions when I just was totally alone with Barbara, which now in retrospect is just, I was talking with Gohair about it this afternoon. It was absolutely and utterly unbelievable. Now, I mean, then one didn't think anything of it. And I think the other thing that really is something that has stayed with me, and I hopefully for the rest of this particular lifetime and many lifetimes to come, was the incredible peace and calm of being at Mare Reserve. I mean, it was total and utter peace and calm. Now it isn't. It's very difficult to find it. Occasionally you'll get a minute or two of it. And I marvel at the way the Mandalay handle things now, but at the time it was just total isolation and total and utter peace and utter quiet, such as I just don't think one normally experiences. And it could also be very boisterous. You'd have the goat herds and the sheep herds who would come as close as they possibly could to get a glimpse of Barbara. I can't remember this in the sequence, I think it was towards the end of the time we were staying there. A group of Persians came who'd come by train from Persia, and they must have had a horrendous journey all the way across Pakistan and down through India. And Barbara allowed them to stay, I think, for 48 hours. I don't know where they stayed, but they were allowed to come out and be with him. And it was just wonderful to see these people who just absolutely loved him. And yeah, men and women came. And I wouldn't call them simple, because I don't like to use the term peasant. I would have called them the more educated. Yeah, the beginning and the middle class. Yeah, they were from Tehran. And they were just absolutely amazing, fascinating people. And they were just allowed their 48 hours, and then they left, and they were perfectly happy to leave. And then there'd be all the different people who came on a constant basis. There was one person who came for this, but they were all local people. But of course, the most incredible thing was getting to know the Mandalay and seeing what everybody did and experiencing just the daily living with the avatar. And it really was daily living. There was routines. You got up and Barbara checked out, as I said earlier, so carefully. I mean, one was so spoiled, and he checked that your food was right, and that you'd eaten right, and that you'd slept properly. And was there anything that you needed? And, of course, the funniest story of all is the snake story, as far as I'm concerned. And this happened in the very beginning, and Barbara kept asking me if something was worrying me, and he'd pick on it like that. Suddenly we'd be in the middle of something, and Barbara would say, is there something worrying you, or you're worried about something, was the expression. And I would say, no, Barbara. And he kept needling away at this. And finally I said, yes, Barbara, there is something that's worrying me. I'm terrified. I'm going to meet a snake. I'm absolutely petrified of snakes. And I'd had a horrendous experience as a child with a snake, and that was one of the reasons why. And Barbara just sort of nodded his head very gently and said, if you see a snake, you must think of me. Just say my name. That was all he said. And I sat there in my rational mind saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to, you know, see a snake and say your name and the snake's going to. Whatever. My rational mind is saying, what in hell am I going to do if I see a snake? And it was the last night we were at Dr. Duncan's cottage, and in the middle of the night I had to piddle. And so I got up and I went outside, and I was just going to piddle on the ground because that's what most people did. And I was looking up, and I mean, I'd never seen stars like that before. It was just it was one of those incredibly clear nights where there'd been enough wind to blow away the smoke. And it was just like there were zillions and zillions of diamonds being showered upon one. And of course, slightly ecstatic and slightly scatty about all that was going on around me and the sanskaric pressures being removed and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden I sort of had a sense that there'd been this on the ground somewhere near me, and I looked down, there's a couple of beady eyes, and I said, oh yes, it's a snake. And internally I was saying Barbara's name, but I didn't say it externally. I did not verbalize it.
Barbara said this to you, but this was before you were staying at Marathon.
Yeah.
And then you went back to
her about me and this happened. Right. And because during the first 3 days, I mean, Barbara was constantly paying incredible attention, you know, and if there was the slightest thing that was wrong with you, and he really wanted to know whether you'd been to the bathroom, and you really wanted to know whether your stomach, it isn't just like we all say to each other, how are you today? And if you said, oh, my stomach fell out this morning and I've got leprosy on 3 feet, and one doesn't listen to it, you know, it's just a parlance. But with Barbara, he really, really wanted to know, because he really wanted to be sure that one's time with him was of the essence, and that everything was functioning so that what he had to give you and what you were supposed to be doing with him was done and nothing got in the way. And he was so clear on that. And this is why, in a sense, he was leading me, because he knew this was something that was bothering me. And I mean, I felt so stupid that I really didn't want to bring it up. It's that sort of situation. At any rate, so I glanced down, and there's just these two beady eyes peering at me in this long, slender body. And I thought, gee, that's interesting. It's a snake. And I really was verbalizing internally, but not externally, Barbara's name. And I sort of had a conversation with the snake. I mean, this is the way I termed it. And I said, oh, hello, snake. How are you? And nice to see you. And what are you doing up at this time of night? And the snake was saying, well, I was just out seeing if there were any rats or mice around for my dinner. And what are you doing up? And I mean, literally said to the snake, I was having a piddle. And he said, oh, and I said, oh, and he turned around and went that way, and I turned around and went back in and got into bed and forgot about it. And of course, one of the first things that happens the next morning is Barbara, who knows all and yet, in a sense, knows nothing, says to me, and how are we this morning, and did you sleep well, and da 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 da. And that was the day we moved over to Marisa. And is anything bothering you? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, it just came back to me then. I'd forgotten completely about it until Barbara asked me. And I told him the story, and of course somebody had to ask me to describe the snake, and I described it, and a little voice who shall be nameless said, oh, that's a crate. That's one of the deadliest snakes in India. It strikes without any warning whatsoever or any provocation. And I said, oh. And then Dr. Duncan told his story of the snake, how he'd been bitten by a snake that was in his boot. And he traveled hundreds of miles over India with his leg swelling up because Barbara had sent him off on a message before. He finally passed out in a train and they had to cut his boot off. So I decided I obviously had problems with snakes. There are so many things to me that were highlights. There are some things that are so personal that I can't even talk about them now. I really wish I could, but I can't. There were discussions that Don and I had with Barbara. There were my own discussions with Barbara. There were some very intimate emotional times that were just unbelievable. In some ways, one of the highlights, and there were many of them, was, of course, going to Arangal. And Baba had told us the story of the village. And we all set off. And it was an incredibly hot day, much hotter than usual for that time of year. And we got to the village, and Baba started walking, and he was instantaneously surrounded by everybody. And he must have gone 50 to 100 yards down the first part of the village. I just broke down in tears. I'm almost doing it now. I couldn't understand what was happening to me. I mean, it was very beautiful, but I just, you know. And all of a sudden, they had the dervish dances, they had the drums, they had the cymbals, they had the sticks, the noise, the heat, and all of a sudden, everything stopped. And somebody came back to find me. Baba wants to know where I was. And so I had to go right at the front and be right by Baba. And the same thing happened again. And the same thing happened again. They had to stop everything, and Baba had to... I mean, I felt like an absolute idiot by this time. I just had absolutely no control whatsoever. And we got to one point where this wonderful old lady, I mean, her face will be part of my life for many, many lifetimes, I'm sure. And she had pawned her best sari so that she could buy the colored paints, and she had put these decorations outside, literally her hovel, because she wanted Barbara to come in. And Barbara, in his teasing way, of course, had gone past, and this poor lady was just as hysterical as I was. And I had seen what had gone on, and I'd picked up on this, and my heart just went out to her. I mean, to me, this was a tragedy, and suddenly the whole thing stopped again, because I'd sat down. I couldn't go any further. I couldn't move. I couldn't think. I couldn't feel. I was totally beyond the pale. And of course, at this point, Baba used this as an excuse to see what was going on, quote unquote. And of course, the little old lady got Baba's attention. And of course, Baba went in to her little hovel, and she had got a garland for him. And she had, I mean, obviously, it was the crowning achievement of a lifetime for her. And her face, when Baba walked into her house, I mean, I just cannot forget it. It was absolute rapture. It was just unbelievable to see this tiny old lady. You know, I'm sure she'd never traveled further than Ahmednagar in her life, and to have God come into her house is just unreal. I mean, I could see her sort of over cups of tea for years afterwards telling the neighbors how God had come to her house. And then we continued on, and by this time I was really doing my best to keep up. It was terribly difficult, and I must have gone through 18 handkerchiefs if I'd had 18 handkerchiefs. And my front of my shirt was absolutely sopping wet. And we got to the new community hall that was going to be dedicated. And Baba had sat down, and there was an incredible, incredible moment of silence, the likes of which I'd never experienced before or since. And it was as if for an infinite moment the world stopped because of whatever work he was doing. And I remember that someone was always looking for me, it seemed, and I didn't do it on purpose, but it just was the way that things were. And I just couldn't keep up. I just couldn't emotionally be there. And I'd stuck myself behind a pillar where I could see Baba. If I could see Baba's face, I was all right, but if I couldn't see his face, I was lost. And Baba was sitting, and all the animals around that had been making the usual animal noises that animals do on a constant basis stopped in the silence. And it became like a very special velvet cloud. And you really felt you were on white velvet. And I was looking, and there were crows. This huge carrion crow came down and landed on the back of a sheep and was turning its head towards Baba. And as I looked around, all the animals that somehow had managed to gather around, and of course I wasn't aware of how many animals were constantly loose in India, had all come in, and I had this incredible picture of the manger, only in a different way from what we imagine the manger. All the animals coming. And this little girl sat down with a harmonium, and she started to sing an arty to Baba, and she got about a third of the way through, and she just broke down. And all I can remember is, like, I collapsed on the spot. And she tried about three times more, and none of the animals, none of the birds moved, which is incredible when you stop and think about it, because they're, you know, constantly moving. And this one carrion crow, and I have a picture of him somewhere. I couldn't find it because I wanted to bring it this time. And he had his head on one side looking at Baba. And if I'd have needed proof, which of course by then I had absolutely no need of it, but if I'd ever needed, that damn bird would have given it to me, because I've never seen it. It was uncanny. It sat on the back of the sheep, and during the whole time it did not move, and it had its head in this real, I'm in the presence of something really special and really different. It didn't budge. It was the most incredible thing. And then finally the little girl just couldn't do it anymore, and Baba hugged her, and she sobbed and sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And somebody else sang, and then a group sang. But the experience for me out of that whole thing was the old lady and the bird. And I remember afterwards just piling in the car and just feeling absolutely wiped out. And I had Baba's hand on my shoulder. It must have been for a good 15 minutes. And Baba gave me one of his garlands, which is, in my terms, absolutely awful. It was tinsel and orange, and it just looked absolutely terrible. But who gave it to me? He put it on me. And just as we got in the car. And I wore it for a little while. It was absolutely unbelievable.
His hand was on your shoulder in the village?
No, several times in the village. Mm-hmm. When every time someone would come and get me, he would then put his hand on my shoulder and sort of push me forward so I would be in front. And I just could not emotionally or physiologically or psychologically keep up. And when we were in the car, I remember his hand being on my shoulder. I was in the front seat and he was in the back. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Do you remember any of the other things that may have been said at Marathon? The things you might have asked or things you asked them on the show?
Well, some of the things were that he talked about Don and I, and he pointed out that I was the heart quality in the relationship and Don was the head quality, which I think was incredibly true, much, much truer than one would ever realize. I don't really remember there being that much discussion, and I think it's important to understand that this, I mean, I was really opened, and I was opened on an emotional basis, and things on an intellectual basis really didn't impinge or have much effect on me. In a sense, I'm sorry now, but I don't think the Baba wanted me to pick up on some of the intellectual stuff, so it was didn't happen.
Well, were you at all apprehensive of what Baba would think about your relationship?
No. I figured afterwards, I figured that he knew all there was to know, mm-hmm. and what difference did it make. I never had any sense of condemnation or negativity. I mean, completely and utterly the contrary. And as I said earlier, there was a long correspondence that went on with Marnie writing to both me and to Don for a long period of time afterwards. And one thing that was kind of interesting was that because Don at that time was a Sufi, I asked Barbara if I should become a Sufi because I felt that was appropriate. And Baba became quite adamant, really strongly adamant, that I had come to him and I was his and I didn't need any ism and I was not to belong to any ism under any circumstances. He made that very, very clear. And I included psychology and all the psychological stuff in that. And that's been very true. I remember one incident that was really kind of interesting. And I do not know who the two people were concerned, I just know what happened. And that was somebody came in and was basically tattletaling, telling a story about someone else. And from my perspective, I saw Baba get angry at that point. And he really got angry and he clapped his hands. And they found the other person involved, and the other person came in, and the other person did virtually the same thing as the first person did. And he banged their heads together. But I mean, I expected sparks to fly and thunder to appear. And it was the most amazing example of the positive use of what I would call anger. And remember, these are my terms, not Barbara's terms, that I could imagine. It was just absolutely amazing to see. And it was a real positive way of demonstrating sometimes you can get things moving with controlled energy, anger, that doesn't have all the negativity attached to it. It was years afterwards I realized what was going on. And the other thing that happened is that many, many times Barbara had said things to me, or at least apparently had said things to me, and it was like he'd lock it away in the filing cabinet, and he had the key. And there have been certain times when I've been working with people. I'll give you one example. I was working with a man who had sex with both of his daughters several occasions, and one of the daughters had become pregnant and had an abortion. And for me, it was a very difficult situation to deal with, and I was trying real hard not to be judgmental, but I also want to feel some empathy because this man needed help. That's why he was there in my office. And it wasn't for me to judge him. And yet I was feeling very judgmental. I could feel that coming. And I remembered something that Barbara had said about how easy it was to get oneself in the position of playing God. And one had power, and one could use that power in a positive or a negative way. And he had told a story, and at this moment in time, I do not remember the story. I just know that at that particular time, he opened that little filing cabinet, pulled out the file and said, okay, you want help, here it is. And I was able to deal with that particular situation, I hope, in a warm way and a non-condemning way. And we did end up keeping the family together, which is very unusual in cases like that, because normally laws are such that the father is punished on a legal basis and the family structure is destroyed, which I always think is terribly wrong. And because of something that Barbara had said, which had remained in my memory, I was able to do that. And that's happened on many occasions to me. And I have the sense that one of the things that happened with Barbara was that he set all sorts of things in motion for me personally, and yet didn't give me any idea he was setting those things in motion. And as they've happened throughout the 23 years that I've been with him, for example, when Don and I finally split up, for me it was a horrendous situation to go through. It was absolutely awful. And it was just after we'd been to Last Darshan, and Don had met a friend of mine and quote-unquote had fallen madly in love with him and told me when I got back from Last Darshan. And A, because of things that Barbara had told me, and B, because of the support that Hildy Halpin gave me, I was able to go through that. And I wouldn't have been if Barbara hadn't put those pieces somehow in my mind and locked them away. It's absolutely amazing. And this has just happened so, so many times. And I've had to deal with so many incredible different circumstances.
So you were together quite a long time.
Yeah, 11 years. And, you know, I'm not, I don't want to give the impression for the record that I was some paragon of virtue and Dom was some terrible, dastardly person. It wasn't that at all. It was very difficult, and I have great admiration for the way Don handled living with me in many, many ways. But there were also a lot of problems that could have been dealt with. But Barbara somehow, I mean, because of his being all-knowing, Erish was talking about it yesterday, and boy, it rang home in my mind. He would always let you know that he was all-knowing, but he would also let you do the work that had to be done for you, for your growth and development. And we talked about homosexuality at one point, very briefly, not in any great depth. And Barbara just said very simply, it is a soul that is going from this to this and is there. So it could be a soul that was going from the male to the female or from the female to the male and gets stuck. That's all that I know about it. And it came up very simply.
I mean, I didn't quite follow it. I mean, it's like,
Well, in the whole karmic sphere of things, you know, apparently we go backwards and forwards from being male and female, and we've all been male and we've all been female. And apparently at some point one is going from being a male form into a female form, and that somehow one doesn't quite complete it and one has to come down and take up whatever lifetime one has to take up. That's how I understood it.
How did the subject come up?
You know, I really don't remember how it came up. I just remember that it was a very simple, tiny moment in time that it happened, and that was it.
Must be the people that have operations also are similar faces.
You mean what are called transsexuals?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that must
maybe
be the epitome.
Maybe
yeah, I think that's the epitome of what it is. Because people who do have the operations in general, transsexuals, who have nothing to do with homosexuality whatsoever, their sexual attraction is always, in that case, the opposite gender, are almost never happy or satisfied when they've had it.
After that,
right? There are almost none. There have been lots of studies done.
Well, they weren't happy before
you? Right. It's like basically they're supposed to have an unhappy life, and rather than accept having an unhappy life, they are physiologically able to change it, but psychologically and spiritually. I've worked with quite a few transsexuals who are very, I mean, they say they would never go through it again. And it's really interesting. And I think that's part of the thing, I mean, again, from my perspective, that Baba has shared with us is that sexuality is one of those issues we absolutely have to confront and deal with. And by that, I don't mean that he was saying that we have to rush around and have sex like mad left, right, and center, which is what we're doing in the West, but that it's an issue that has to be confronted and looked at, and you can't run away from it. And running away from it is either not having it at all or having too much of it, you know, stuff. Thing.
Something I think that I would use in the book kind of about homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, I don't really remember that.
Yeah.
Is that an accurate thing?
I can't remember
what she says in there.
Exactly what it is that she says in there. I'd have to look at it to see.
So then did you come in 62?
No, I didn't come in 62 because I was supposed to come when I got sick. And Don came, and that was one of our difficult periods at any rate. It's interesting.
He came again also after 62.
Yeah.
But anyway, right.
Yeah. No, what happened in 62 was I got sick, and I ended up in a hotel in Brussels. And I wasn't sad. I was melancholy. That's the word I would use. More than anything else. I was real melancholy about the whole situation.
And you would have gone.
And I should have gone and so on and so on.
You would have gone if you were sick.
Yeah, right. And I'd gone to bed and I was just very comfortable and very much at peace but very melancholic. And I woke up in, I assume, the middle of the night. I really didn't look at the time or anything. And Barbara was standing right by my bed with his arms open. And with a wonderful smile on his face. And I would imagine that we stayed like that for about 15 minutes. And it was one of the most exciting and delightful and fascinating experiences that I've ever had. And nothing was said, nothing needed to be said. It was just like the beloved and the lover and I don't know, I suppose I felt like Layla and Mejnu and all the other lovers down through history. I mean, there was the most adored person in the world in my life and in history, just standing, smiling at me with open arms, and I was able to smile and receive.
Did you write to Barbara about it?
I wrote to Barbara about it, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
And we had sort of an odd, zany correspondence too, which was kind of fun, which went on. And obviously, Marnie was the one who wrote most of the letters. And corresponded about things. And there was one funny thing that happened. Barbara had said there would be things that I would be able to do for him, which, I mean, sounded absolutely crazy. I could imagine doing anything for Barbara that would be of any use. And at one point, I went to London, and Barbara had money right. And one of the things that he asked was that I go to the Monday night group in London, Friday night group. And I went, and I almost went mad because there was Delia in one corner, Fred Marks in another, and Charles Purdom in another, and Will and Mary Backett in another, and Molly and Douglas Eve in another. And because I was very young, I mean, I was the youngest person by years with this particular group, I literally got batted around like a shuttlecock. I felt like I was a real shuttlecock in a badminton game. And I finally wrote to Bob and said, do I have to go? And I mean, I didn't say it was crazy. I didn't want to be backbiting, but I just said, do I have to go? And the only thing I got back was a reply which said, do you love me? Mm-hmm. So I went. And that was just the craziest experience of my life. And I remember the only thing I could ever think to do. And Charles would say one thing to me, and Fred Marks would say another, and Will and Mary Backett would say another, and Delia would say another. And I absolutely adored Will and Mary Backett and the Eves. I thought they were just sensational. And I still adore Molly Eve. I think she's such a Barbara person. It's unreal. And poor Charles and I just seemed to get into so many arguments. I mean, I couldn't open my mouth, and I know that now that Barbara was testing me. And Delia would say, well, I'll tell you this, but you mustn't tell Will and Mary. And then somebody else would say, well, I'll tell you this, but you mustn't tell Delia. And then Charles would say, well, I don't want Fred or the Backers to know this, but I'm going to tell you this because this is what I think. And I would I'd just come out of there, and I felt like I'd been, you know, compressed into a tiny little square and could do anything you wanted with me. And at one point, we were told very, very strictly that we were not to write or communicate with Barbara under any circumstances unless it was a dire emergency. I figured, okay. And so I got a letter from Money, a very brief little letter, saying that Barbara was concerned he hadn't heard from me because I was doing my exams to sit for the Oxford and Cambridge Oxcam exams and for the Scholastic Aptitude exams. And I just got this little note saying Barbara was concerned he hadn't heard from me. And so I wrote back a funny card saying that I thought we weren't supposed to write. I mean, I'd understood that we were not supposed to communicate unless it was a dire emergency. And I just got back a little note saying, Barbara says, who says that included you? just, you know, gave one license and liberty, but one tried not to take it. And that was in 61. In January and February of 61. Because I think the family letter for Christmas came out and said, so it was in January. Yeah. So that was in January of 61. I remember that very well. Because of all I was going through with the London group.
So then, was Don there with you?
No, I was by myself at that point. Don had gone back. We had been living in Holland. And Don had been transferred back to the States. And I'd had to go to London to do a course in zoology and botany, which I couldn't do anywhere else, for the exams.
Because, see, Don came at the beginning of 64, I think, or
mm-hmm. the end of 64. And he came in the beginning of 64. What happened was, as far as Don and I were concerned, is that in March of 61, I was given a scholarship to go to Stanford. And it was he, by that time, had found out that he was not going to be transferred back to Europe by Standard Oil, because he had been in Europe, and we figured we'd be living in Holland together. And I had known one of the men who became part of Kennedy's Golden Circle when I was in Paris. And Don was a little nervous of sponsoring me for obvious reasons. And so I got hold of my friends and they said they'd be delighted to sponsor me and I would come and stay in Washington with them. And so I left at the end of May. Went to New York, spent a few days in New York, went to Washington, spent a night at the White House, met the Kennedys, and flew on to California. And Don and I lived in California from June of 61 through December of 66, in various places. He was still a Sufi. I participated in a lot of the Sufi activities with B. Dimple, who at that time was not a Sufi. And they were mostly older people, too, there were very few young people, besides the Dimple children and the Alvarado children. And they were really young children then. I don't think there was anybody else really of young. They were all old people.
Well, do you know how that came about when he came to India? Say the beginning of 64?
He came the beginning of 64. He was on a business trip and he sent a cable to Baba and Baba said yes, he could come for a few days. And he stayed for a few days. And he came for he came on several occasions when he would be en route from one place. If he was going to the Middle East, he would cable Baba, and Baba would often allow him to come. And it was literally a flying visit, very much.
There was another woman who came, but I don't know if she came with him. Stella Kusevich.
I know the name, but I don't know. I don't think she came.
Yeah.
I don't think they came together, because Don would come by himself, purely because he was somewhere close by on business. He was the top expert for Standard Oil and the different types of crude from Boscan all the way down. Boscan, I think, being the, from my recollections, being the highest and the lightest crude. And whenever there were chemical problems with the crude, either from transshipments or from refineries, he would be the one who would be sent. And so he had more opportunities. Then for a period of time, he didn't have any opportunities because he was concentrated on Venezuelan and Jamaican, Trinidad, and the Caribbean and South America. So he didn't have, and then he went to Japan for a whole year. So he didn't have opportunities to come.
So there wasn't really possibility of going with him then?
Right. No. Most of the other times that he came, there really wasn't an opportunity, and if I remember correctly, there was one other time when Barbara invited me and I was in the middle of exams. And I think when Don told Barbara that I was in the middle of important exams, Barbara said that I had to do the exams and not come to see him. No, I didn't. I absolutely hated Stanford. I went to San Francisco State, which in those days was wonderful, very much like a European college. And had a lot of painful experiences and a lot of wonderful experiences. And my Barber contact kept up through the letters from Money and being allowed to write and send silly postcards and presents and things with Don when he came. And I cannot remember a time that Don came back when there wasn't a personal message from Barber in some way, shape, or form. And that caring process just went on and on and on and on and on and on. And it really was an endless process as far as I'm concerned. And I really felt very, very spoiled and very loved by Barber. And Erish was saying the other day that, and Erish has said this on several occasions, that Barber considered me a very, very special person. At one point, one incident that I forgot, which I think is really important, is that when we were talking about what I wanted to do, I, in a half-joking, half-serious manner, said to Barber, well, basically, I want to be here with my begging bowl and be with you. And Barber got quite, I would term it, angry, and pointed out that I was, that it was in the West, and I was to do my work in the West, and that's where he wanted me, and that was all there was to that. And I've always suspected that's one of the reasons that I didn't come in 62, because I suspect, and I don't know this for sure, I asked Erish about it once, and he said he thought it was a possibility, that if I'd have come in 62 and said to Barbara, I want to be here with you, I don't want to be in the West, that Barbara, because he loved his lovers, would have said, okay. And I would have just fouled up lifetimes or something. I don't know, but, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Ladd and I discussed it on many occasions because of, he told me all the questions that Baba had asked him about taking care of his family and so on and so forth. Right. And that's exactly it. And that's the thing. And I really have, and I mean, it could be just ego stuff, but I've always had the thing in the back of my mind. The reason I did not get here in 62 was because I may have, in some way, shape, or form, had the contact with Baba, said, I really want to be here with you. And then we came. Go on, you've got questions.
I don't, actually. I should say one.
Okay.
No, I don't.
But do you want me to continue, or should I? Okay. In 67, I had wanted to teach. I knew I had to teach before I could go further. And in America in those days, if you were a foreigner, you weren't allowed to teach. And if you were a man, the idea of teaching little kids was very suspect and very bizarre. And I had been given two awards by a foundation that dealt with education and special education. Couldn't use them. There was no way that they would accept me. And I mean, obviously within a certain area, maybe if I'd have gone to Poughkeepsie or somewhere, it might have worked, but I wanted to be around Don. And Don and I agreed that I would come back to London. And I had worked for a while with the Flower Power Kids as a counselor. And so when I came back to London, a friend of mine who was an MD said, would I please come and help them? Because they were beginning to have drug problems in London. And no one knew anything about it. And so I was the first psychologist in England to work in the drug field and helped to set up one of the big drug programs. And I then went to work in a fabulous school for children who have known any etiology, which basically means that if you saw them, you'd say they were schizophrenic.